Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and with me, as always, is Steve. How are you doing,
John? I'm good. I'm around. How are you?
Good. And I was just reading about some of these fintechs who freaked out at the beginning of the pandemic, laid off people, and tried to raise as much money as they could, but they ended up okay anyway, and they ended up hiring back a lot of people. And one that was actually, I'm surprised at any of them. Really, I thought they would get hit much harder. But Brex, which we see ads for all the time around here in the Bay Area in California,
we do.
Is looks like they're one of those stories. They laid off, but then they're doing fine.
So did they hire more people, or did they just raise more money? What happened with Brex? I missed the story.
They laid off people. I think it was the end of May, like 62 of their people. But then all I see about them afterwards is they raised $150 million. They have a new higher valuation. They just announced last month, actually in the end of July, that they have FDIC insurance on their cash management accounts.
Great.
They have all this new stuff. They acquired like three different companies recently. So it looks like they're just barreling through with their growth and plans as if there wasn't any pandemic at all.
Well, it's interesting to say because this is sort of a well-known trope, but I think that in times of crisis, you do see a lot of innovation and creation of good goods and services that I think could spur the growth of some startups. I'm thinking here of the fact that if you trace back to the last financial crisis in 08, 09, a lot of the companies that we now take for granted, you know, the Airbnbs of the world, the Ubers and Lyfts and all those sort of gig economy places, were born out of this crisis. So I can see how this current health crisis will have effects, not just in technology, but also in education and healthcare and other things as well. So I think they may be at the vanguard here of what could be an interesting trend in terms of what gets created during this awful, awful time.
Yeah, pandemic? Wow, that's just a slingshot to success.
Exactly.
But in this case, maybe the survivors end up stronger and some of the weaker players die off. They're only around for 3 years and they've raised $400 million in funding. So I see a lot of people doing that, building up. You know, Robinhood's raised like $800 some million, and they want to make sure that they are survivors for sure. And who knows, the ones that will take them out, as you're saying, might be just starting now that we haven't even heard of them.
I think Fred Hayek would be proud.
One of those layoffs are going to come back for you later. Well, we have a very successful company joining us this week and a very interesting guest, Sergey Pantelev, head of the Sofia branch, that's in Bulgaria, for Varen Gold Bank. Welcome to the podcast, Sergey.
Steve, John, thank you for having me. Greetings from sunny Sofia, 95 degrees Fahrenheit.
And this is at night. It's already 95 degrees. And
actually, it starts to release a little bit. Now it's 85, I would say. But during the day, it was solid 95. And this is for a few days now. Now it's evening. People are walking down the streets, having fun, looking forward to join them, Steve and John. And for you, I know it's morning. So enjoy your coffee.
Okay. We're ready. Tell us a little bit about Varen Gold Bank. We've had a guest before, head of the London branch, but tell us what's going on for Varen Gold in Sofia, in Bulgaria.
First of all, out of Bulgaria, we are covering Bulgaria and Central and Eastern Europe, which is, if you can imagine Europe, you know, down south a little bit, downright southish. Southeastern Europe is the so-called Balkans. So this part of the world kind of rejoined Europe 30 years ago when the Iron Wall fell. Basically, this part of the world was more related to the Soviet Union rather than Europe. But historically, the country and the region was part of Europe for, ages. What, why I mean so? Bulgaria was founded 681, gentlemen, almost 1,400 years old. So it is, always a country on the crossroads, a lot of things happening. And that's why we in Varen Gold decided that it's good time to have our Sofia branch located exactly, specifically in Bulgaria, because we want to, on one side, cover Bulgaria, which is kind of the informal fintech hub for the region on one side. And second, We want to make sure that we are servicing those neighboring countries which are quite fast pacing up with Western Europe.
So that's a really good segue here. Can you tell us a bit about what Varingold does and how you're enabling the fintechs that you mentioned are sort of popping up in both Eastern and Central Europe, and what role you play in that?
I would say that Varingold tried to position itself, and in our heads we are, the bank of the marketplace lending industry in Europe. In order this to be true, besides us being present in our headquarter and in our headquarter country, which is Germany, Hamburg, and also in the fintech capital of Europe, UK, we decided that it's a good time to open up a location in the so-called New Europe. You know, like those countries that are brought back in Europe a few years ago, depending on which country. And why so? Historically, the region is predominantly serviced by conventional banks, institutes. So 95% of the financial services in Southeastern Europe is done and still done by banks. But it seems that with the development of, I will say, internet, you know, these social platforms, people traveling, knowing about cool stuff, it seems that fintech kind of found its ground and a fertile soil here in the region. What does it mean? For instance, there we have this very big, probably heard about it, a very big fintech company in Europe called Revolut. I'm sure you know it.
Oh, yeah.
Without physical presence and team in Bulgaria, they captured kind of 100,000 clients only for a year or something. So you can only imagine that people are ready for the service. They want that service. And basically, they are not able to get it from the conventional institutes. And this is a niche where fintech steps in. So what I wanted to say is that the size, the impact, let's say, of what fintechs capture and do in the region is rather small in nominal terms. This is one side. Second, historically, the country and the region was kind of a hub for very, I would say, intellectual or very smart people. Even Bulgaria was the informal, I would say, first personal computer producer for Soviet Union. What does it mean? We used to have a factory back in the days when we were part of this side of the world called Pravets, which were first personal computers were produced in the Soviet Union bloc. So historically, we have great mathematicians, great IT people, or people who can really are into that area. So fintech is basically every digitalization or digital angle you can put a classical financial service. And what I see and what in Varingold we feel about it is that fintech is an industry, and specifically the marketplace lending, which will provide the flexibility that customers want and unfortunately are not able to get from conventional. We shouldn't underestimate them. They have big budgets. They can really, spend a lot of R&D budgets on capturing customers. That's why Varingold decided that it's great to be now here to participate in this early development of the region and support institutionally the prominent players, the players that really deserve attention and might be the next you.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I was going to ask you actually about how the culture is in Bulgaria and in that region with regard to relationship to financial institutions and the culture as far as accepting new technology. But it sounds like people are eager to try new things and to embrace the new fintech services.
I think you have two basic factors that you should have in mind when talk about financial services in Bulgaria region and Europe as a whole. Unfortunately, Europe, gentlemen, is, getting older and older, I don't know, mixture of people.
Right. The fertility rate is down and the population is aging.
Exactly. So what is the result of this? You have older people, much richer people, and naturally more conservative, right? This is one assumption. Another assumption is that those people are sitting on quite a lot of wealth and now they need to diversify. One thing is they go to the conventional institutes and try to do their own thing, which you know better than me probably how well it's done, or you can try to find alternative. So, you know, people talking about that Europe getting older and that's why it's difficult to accept innovation, even, you know, in financial services, I cannot really how to say, buy it, because I think even those people are looking for alternative and they're open up to this financial innovation on one side. On the other, you have, you know, natural things happening that you have non-Europe country members, which are quite younger in population to the, I would say, core Europe countries, and they are natural immigrants towards Europe. So those guys, being kind of travel immigrants, if you want, working immigrants, they naturally need to use financial services that fit their needs. Conventional institutes are not able to capture these flows, while financial institutions, payment institutions, you know, all everything related to financial, to fintech, is kind of the companies that can serve that flow. So you have another driver for people in Europe and travelers in Europe to use that that angle. Third, as I already said, younger people are much fastly accepting and advancing in using, I would say, not only fintech solutions, but you know, digital solution per se, digital healthcare, you know, all that stuff through their cell phones, through their, you know, I don't know, personal computers, whatever. And for them, it's just the natural thing. It's just another platform, another way of communicating between each other, which at the end is, you know, financial services or whatever you call it. Suggestion is right. Unfortunately, we are limited due to the size. Europe is quite fragmented. Probably in your eyes, Europe is kind of a hole, you know, on the map, Europeans, cool guys, sometimes not so cool, but unfortunately, quite fragmented in terms of legislation, local specific culture, even if you want it, you know, rule of law, implication of law. Here, it's an issue. Why? If you are, I would say, a company that want to really scale and compete on a global on the global market, definitely you want to penetrate all possible markets in Europe. It's difficult, gentlemen, because there is no single regulation. Now, European Union is working towards that one, no single EU regulation for fintechs, which would be great, because market is looking for that. For instance, if I'm successful business in Bulgaria and I want to kind of go and do that in Romania, it should be like you doing your stuff in, I don't know, California and just moving to New York. Unfortunately, this is not the case. You need to have in mind different legislation, which should be synchronized in a way with the general EU one. But again, there is this specifics. That's why I think for some of the companies to really become international cross Europe models, it takes some time and definitely capex. So you need to have deep pockets, you need to have equity providers, which prior to COVID were there, because a lot of people saw the potential, how Europe is, how to say, catching up, and there is potential for those services to be pushed to the clients. Unfortunately, COVID came in, and as you, I think John was saying that one, a lot of companies kind of, you know, cut everything, you know, just to protect the companies and the balance sheet, their business models. But it seems, and I fully agree with you, that also in Europe, it was too much precautionary measures. It seems that the market is recovering much faster to the previous financial crisis. And it seems that those guys did quite well in servicing specific client needs exactly during the lockdowns, because no physical presence was needed. Historically, or let's say by origin, fintech companies and providers are done to be fully digital. So conventional institutes kind of lagged behind, you know, conventional banks, while the fintech and specifically the clients we work with, peer-to-peer platforms, were much faster in implementing solutions that are ready to support physical individuals' needs or small and medium enterprise.
So you mentioned the regulation and the fact that it may be not as easy as somebody from, say, go from California to New York as it would be to go from Bulgaria to Romania. What are some of the services that Varengold can provide to sort of demystify or maybe smooth out some of the regulatory bumps that you may see along the way, even though you're still operating within the Eurozone or within the EU? How does that work?
Actually, you know, us being in Bulgaria is kind of... it's kind of an example that you can move across European markets, because we are providing services here in Bulgaria and London through branches, right? So easily a bank can open a branch and kind of this EU passporting, it's called, this specific procedure. You basically have the right to provide your services in all the European states. On our end, for the banks, this is quite, how to say, done. While for fintechs, which are lacking some regulation, they're more or less treated as a as a company within the respective country, which have some specific statute. In some countries which are more advanced, which are Baltics, they're treated more openly for them to provide services not only on their market but the neighboring markets, while for some it's more conservative. So here, Varengo steps in. We are, let's say, in our origin, we are a bank. We go to our customers, peer-to-peer marketplaces, which are basically supporting either consumers or small and medium enterprises. And basically, we go with our balance sheet. So we are their institutional support for them to scale, to capture biggest possible market on their, let's say, origin country or the countries they already had footprint on, and then really get to the next level. Really get to the big guys and where they can really, you know, do the next revolution or already called it. So definitely, so first of all, we are there with our balance sheet. Second, a very interesting client, product line for us is the so-called fronting, which helps the issue that I mentioned. For us as a bank, as a German regulated institute, it is easy to capture and to step on different markets in Europe through this passport regulation that I mentioned. With the prominent customers of ours, we can together approach a market. For instance, just an example, if you're in Bulgaria but not able to do your business in Romania, we can find a way where us giving you part of our infrastructure, even regulatory wise, in order for you to enter on that market, do your business, and basically how to say, capitalize on your business model. So we call this fronting. So we just kind of front our customers on the markets that we are present. So I think these two streams of one, we providing a balance sheet, the institutional support they need to grow their business, plus the fronting for them to really grow across Europe-wise, is the unique value proposition that our customers get from us.
So they can ride on your shoulders. You've already done all the legwork so they can operate in that country, and then they can just have a smooth back and forth in every country that you operate in.
Kind of, yes. You know, said like that, it's very easy. Of course, there is quite a lot of things you need to do that.
Just go to Mars, make a base. Not a big deal. Yeah.
But in a way, yes. In a way, yes. You know, what we saw working with fintechs is that they're so great in creating one or few products. They're thinking about those 24/7. And sometimes for them, these compliance issues, KYC issues, ILM issues, payment infrastructure issues, entering new markets, legislation issues, is not really the native thing they need to think about, right? Kind of we're the partner because at the end we're bankers, we're not techies. We just sit down with them and they see that we understand their industry, we understand their hustle, and kind of together create the pace under which they can really grow, but sustainably grow. Because, you know, sometimes you can really skyrocket, but if infrastructure inside is, how to say, ruined from the beginning, it's really difficult to create sustainable business. And I think our partners value that.
So is there anything distinct about the fintechs that you work with in out of the Sofia branch versus what's common or more popular out of the London branch?
I will say not really, but I should mention when we entered back 2018, we partnered with, one of the prominent players in Bulgaria, peer-to-peer platform called Clear Lending. What we saw there, the specific case about this platform is that usually platforms are more or less the platform on which you connect borrower and lender, right? You're kind of a broker between those entities. You kind of, you know, just create the bond. While this platform is basically having a license to lend, they actually lend first and then they sell to potential investors, which created a very interesting angle. Why? Even during the COVID, their performance was so solid because always they have skin in the game. So they're always interested to onboard such a borrowers that will result in successful repayment on one side. And they present such a portfolio to their investors, including us, that really satisfies in performance even during the difficult COVID crisis. So I will say that this platform is rather unique in the region compared to the classical form of peer-to-peer platform. And I think they have quite good potential to capture good market in the region. Why? Because when you go to a customer in the region, but also in Europe, as I told you, 95%, at least in our part here, Southeastern Europe, is covered by conventional banks. And when a customer wants a financing, usually the first thing that pops up in their mind is go to my bank, right? And now I think this is changing. And if those guys with the setup they have, they are really close to what usually a bank do, and their motto is we are banking 2.0, I think they can really nicely capture exactly this customer base. Another thing is that usually fintechs, they want to capture customers and sectors which are underserviced by conventional institutes for some reason. Either the risk is too high, but let's say with such a value proposition that I currently mentioned for Clear Lending, it seems that clients could naturally flow bankable, so banking, untapped potential could really move in that direction. So if this is kind of the specifics we have, the rest is pretty much similar. In Europe, the good thing is freedom of services and people. So all the new things that happen on certain markets can easily flow to the other. The only issue is you need to accommodate to the respective legislation.
That's pretty interesting. Can you, before we started recording, you were mentioning basically how Bulgaria is in an interesting place politically now, in terms of its place in the EU and also regionally. Can you walk us through what's going on there right now and how that could maybe affect the fintech business, or even if it won't affect the fintech business?
Yeah, I will answer you my answer will be in two parts. So prior COVID and after COVID. And I will just put some, latest development on the political side, but definitely guys, I will not comment politics. It's far away from me, but I will just mention just to have a complete overview. So, prior to COVID, you had the best year ever in the region, I would say mostly in Europe. 2019, greatest year, performance, revenue, skyrocketing in valuation of fintechs. A lot of companies were really expanding, thinking how to capture market, how to become really global players. Then, unfortunately, COVID came. Prior to that, a lot of people were already saying that this was the longest rally we saw from the last financial crisis and correction should come. Nobody expected this type of correction, but it came, no matter from where. So when the correction came, I felt, and I think it's already felt from many people, that there was two things that drive social unrest. One thing is this unfairness, because a lot of people during this perfect years created more and more wealth while a lot of people were left behind. So kind of the gap between poor and rich, at least in our part of the world, kind of widened. So you don't create kind of a middle class, but you just widen this gap. This one side. Second, when COVID came, a lot of people just used this as probably triggered something inside that they were understanding that they're not happy with current situation and that COVID and how specific governments treated COVID, respectively in Europe, as I told you, we are a whole, but in different pieces, decided that this is the time thing that fell over the glass. And they actually decided that they're unhappy with their ruling parties. And you had kind of a mixture of the perfect storm. On one side, you have the COVID thing, you have this financial consequences of COVID, which are quite harsh, but not so harsh as we expected on one side. And then you have this, social impact of the people, there was this disturbance. So what happened is that a lot of people in Bulgaria and also in the region kind of went out on the street after the lockdown and wanted to show that they're unhappy to how their present governments are managing the situation. So what we currently think is that governments trying to, do whatever it's in their needs to basically to support as much as possible the economies, the respective economies, in order to make sure that the social unrest will not continue on one side. And second, to make sure that there is a clear road ahead for people getting back to work. If you remember the beginning, it is a specific region because for us, Europe and way of things were reintroduced 30 years ago. A lot of things were happening much faster to usually happens in Western Europe or Western part of the world, let's put it this way. And during this transition, a lot of things were missed and now they need to be placed up. But This is kind of the situation as it is. Me personally, gentlemen, my feeling is that a lot of people currently in the Bulgarian, in Bulgaria, in the region, are looking optimistically ahead. It is deadly clear that changes similar to COVID, or even without origin we know as of today, will happen. They will happen more frequently. Our people here in the region are used to that one historically, unfortunately, even if you want. Too many changes happen too frequently. We just move from one, economical system to other. Then we had, you know, different transition periods. Then you have the financial crisis here and there. You have the, and it's kind of, these changes kind of get used to the people on one side, but also it makes us prepare. What does it mean? That I think, thanks to COVID, which is strange to say, we just understand how unpredictable the world could be, but we need to prepare our models. And I think fintechs, Varengold alikes, like us, we can create the right mixture in order to position companies that no matter the change, positive or negative, in front of us is there, we can cope with it. And I think this should be the key message here, you know, that it was disturbance, major disturbance, global disturbance, but it gave us the opportunities. And now there are companies who can capture and those who cannot. I think the successful models prior COVID are the one will capitalize, and those who were too opportunistic or were in the end entering into the game probably will kind of struggle returning to the market.
So I have an interesting data point that I saw that kind of maybe counter to your point. I saw that during the COVID crisis, at least in the U.S., most of the deposits went to the mega banks, right? The Citibanks, JP Morgan, and Wells Fargo's of the world, and not so much the neobanks, although that's slightly changing. It seems like there's a flight to safety as opposed to a flight to innovative new solutions, especially as the mega banks' digital services become more, you know, essentially they become better, and they become sort of more full in their solutions. So I'm wondering here, do you also see that in Bulgaria in terms of the flight to safety, or do you see kind of a rush towards fintech?
It is, as I told you, predominantly the services here are covered by banks. So there was not much to move back, you know, I would say one side. But because even regulatory-wise, deposits, I don't know how it's in US, but in Europe, up to 100,000 euro are covered by the government, right? So if you have kind of 100,000 euro, which is 30,000-40,000 US dollars in a bank, it is protected by, I would say, specific fund. In each country, it's called different name. So naturally, if you don't have this protection into a fintech solution, it is not economically sound solution for you to keep your money exposed to risk, right? If you have a neobank with similar coverage, I think for a regular customer has zero economical reason to move his assets. If this threshold is in place and guaranteeing his money. So as long as fintechs are perceived outside the conventional institutions, conventional banks, and not participating in this guarantee scheme, you definitely will have this move, Steve, when certain economical cycles are in front of us, right? So people just want to feel more secure. So I think this is just the result. It will be interesting what will happen now when people feel more secure or again want to find an alternative, because with these historically low rates, especially in Europe, which we have, guys, we have negative rates. I don't know if you've experienced something like that, but basically if you keep your money in a bank, today you put $1, tomorrow you'll take 99 cents. For this reason, I think if there was something like that, definitely people are eager to find alternatives, because basically their money, due to the monetary policy, will actually lose value if they just sit on deposits in the bank.
Interesting. So it sounds like there's sort of a, it's a different dynamic there you see in Bulgaria that you would see in the US, just given the way the market is maybe a little bit, there's fewer players and fewer fintechs doing more consumer stuff, which is great. I'm wondering also from a Varengold perspective, how do you think this whole thing will shape up in say 2 to 3 years? What's the future look like for Varengold if you had a crystal ball in front of you?
We're optimistic, or at least personally, I'm optimistic. If we are able to, as a society here in Europe, and especially Bulgaria and the region, digest the negative consequences of COVID rather fast and recover faster due to the government help on one side. Fintechs, conventional institutes receiving government help in order to, you know, support the economy. I'm sure that the future is bright. It seems to me and us in Varengold that there is too many underbanked and underserviced customers who are looking for alternative. And as long as those are not serviced, and unfortunately the, you know, the social contract that currently we have in the region and in Europe, if you want, creating a small amount of very rich compared to not so much, you know, not building really, how to say, distributing the wealth equally, there will be these customers who, for some reason, either physical individuals or companies that are going to be needing an alternative. And this alternative, I'm telling you, will come mostly from fintechs and neobanks rather than conventional institutions. And I think people start to look at this in a different direction because they see what's happening in the US, which is basically capital markets, and banks are not so predominantly providing this liquidity. They see what's happening in Asia, and basically I think it is time for Europe to revisit the way business is being funded. So I'm optimistic, and I see ourselves running much faster even to our clients, helping much more clients to accomplish their goal and service those companies and clients which are either left behind on one side or just want an alternative. Helping those companies to cross the border in Europe when needed, because as I told you, still different regulation on one side, but also we are one of the few institutes that really understand fintechs, and we are the ones who support them institutionally, and I would say with our balance sheet, just for them to continue providing their services again to service clients which for some reason are left behind.
Yeah, and you're boosting those fintechs to serve more, grow faster, and do it while being compliant, which if you listen to the podcast, you know I'm always paranoid about. But yeah, it sounds really interesting. You're definitely an interesting part of the world in sunny Bulgaria. Keep up the good work, and thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you, gentlemen. It was a pleasure having this nice talk with you. I wish you all the best. Have a great day, and we keep in touch. Bye-bye.
That's Sergei Pantelev, head of the Sofia branch of Varengold Bank, a partner and taking care of the fronting for fintech companies. Please hit subscribe to keep up with this and the latest in fintech news. Thanks for listening.